Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on a getaway Friday night. Friday, November the 21st, 2025, and we've been having many interesting conversations this week in regard to the finances of the city of Marion and the news that we learned on Monday that the budget proposed by the mayor for nearly $20 million for year 2026 was over the projected revenue, which is about $14 million, we think, give or take, maybe 15, maybe 13, we really don't know at this point. We learned today that some citizens in Marion did not get their paycheck. The reason for that is a little murky at this point. We talked to Jason Schauber earlier, and we also learned today that the mayor sent an email to city council saying that he had talked to all department heads in the city and asked them to reduce their budgets by 10% and report back to him by the 26th of November, which is this upcoming week. Joining us tonight in an exclusive interview, so glad to have her by phone, the Marion City Auditor, Miranda McGinnis. Miranda, how are you?
I'm good, Scott. How are you?
Good. Good to talk with you. Happy holidays coming up. Thanksgiving. Miranda, Monday night's meeting, you were there. How did you take what was going on? The learning that the fire department was on hold, the city's budget was way over the projected revenue. How did you take Monday night's meeting?
I don't want to say I'm surprised, because I'm not. I mean, for the last couple of years, this is the second year, obviously, I have not been a part of the budget process as much as I was before. So it's not, I'll be honest, I wasn't entirely aware of what was going on, but I wasn't surprised to hear that these kinds of things were coming. Now, the amount of expenses that were coming out for general fund, that was obviously a pretty hefty number. That was a little shocking, but I've spoken with several department heads, and I let them know, you know, I'm going to take the opportunity and kind of just see if there's anything that I can find that is either an outlier or something that's been kind of fluffed up over the last few years, and see if there's anything I can do to help.
You know, Miranda, maybe you can help us out with some questions here that we have had. Now, you say you haven't been as much involved in the budget process in the last 2 years. Those have been the two budgets that Mayor Collins has put together. Why are you not as involved as the auditor in the budget process anymore?
So when Collins came into office, he did hire a director of budget management. Originally it was Stacey Courtright. Now it is Chelsea Troiano. Part of their responsibility is to put together the budget. So with me, I don't necessarily focus on processing the budget anymore. That used to be a big part of my end of year, sequence of events. So now essentially what I've been doing is I'll put together the salaries and benefits portion of the budget, because that is something that's always been done by the auditor's office, just to kind of maintain control and make sure that those are being calculated correctly, as far as raises built into contracts and things like that. So I do that portion, and then it goes out to the departments. The departments submit it. Then it goes to the directors. Directors verify everything. Then it goes to the budget director. And that's kind of the final step before it goes to council.
Now, Miranda, do you have conversations with the budget director? Because everybody I've talked to, including the members of city council that I've talked to, don't seem to have a good answer as to what the budget director exactly does. Do you have communication with her?
She comes in my office frequently. I don't, have conversations with her directly. She usually goes to see my deputy auditor, Martin Watts, but there are conversations between her and my office.
So what would you say the budget director does? Because I think the big question is, when the budget was being put together, the original budget, which was nearly $20 million, why did the budget director not know that it was you know, way over.
So there's a couple different possibilities, and I obviously can't confirm or deny any of these because I'm not in her office. I'm not seeing what she's seeing. I'm not looking at the same data she's looking at with the same thought process behind it. So I can speculate, and I will give you my speculations, but I can't confirm or deny any of them. When I did the budget, and the way that it was explained to me when I first came into office is that the budget presented to council essentially is just the expense side of everything that goes on in the city. So council's job is to review that and verify that the expenses are in line with previous years and are not completely out of whack with, you know, historical trends. So potentially it could be that she was just looking at the expense side. I know revenue is one of those things that can be adjusted periodically throughout the year, so it's not necessarily something that's taken a look at as detailed during the budget process. It could be that revenue just hadn't been reviewed for the last several years and kind of taken into account when the budget process was going through. It could be that, you know, when department heads are processing and putting in essentially their quote-unquote wish list for their budgets, right, that nothing got changed. There could be lots of different things.
Want to run through some things here. The auditor of state has been asked to come in by the mayor, and we know in the email the mayor sent out to city council today, he says he expects to hear something possibly on Monday via email. Do you know why this is all happening at the same time? What have you heard? Why did the mayor contact the auditor of state at the same time that the budget seems to be all messed up and the projections? What's been going on?
I'm going to be honest with you, Scott. I don't necessarily think that was on purpose. I think that the mayor, you know, did what he thought was best for the city, and I don't blame him for writing the letter to the state. You know, gathering all the information and being here the last couple years, he's you know, experienced several different things as far as budgets are concerned, and he's seen trends and talking about the firehouse and everything like that. It's you know, that's all one piece of the puzzle, right? I think by him writing that letter, he was looking for more information, trying to figure out if we were on the right track, and ultimately, like I said, doing what he thought was best for the city. I think the budget coming after was a completely separate issue. I don't think that it was intended to be done in conjunction with the letter or anything like that. I don't think it was. I don't think there was any significant thought at the time the letter was written. You know, it could have waited until next year. It could have been written 6 months ago. It could have been one of those things that he was just like, the audit's coming out. We had a conversation with the state. I'm going to write a letter because I'm panicked. I don't know. I don't know the course of action that he took to get there, but I don't believe that those two are connected in any way.
Has he spoken to you about this at all? His worries, his concerns?
We did have a meeting, the administration, I think it was on Wednesday this week. We kind of sat down and we brainstormed, we discussed, you know, historical budgets and things like that and how things are looking and what we need to kind of take a look at moving forward. So we have talked about it, but as far as like just a conversation between he and I, not in depth.
I want to talk about the firehouse for a second. That was the big news story on Monday, that the firehouse has been put on hold. And It came out of a question from somebody who came to the city council meeting, a listener to our station, who asked Ayers Ratliff about it. He asked the question of the mayor. And we all found out that the fire station is on hold. Who knew about this? And how long has it been on hold? Did you know that it was on hold?
I did not. The last thing that I heard anything about the firehouse was the contract with the architect. I was asked to sign that instead of Treasurer Reese, which it was signed, and I returned my my copy of the signed contract to the architect. But that was, gosh, I don't even remember how long ago that was. It's been the last couple months, but yeah, that's the last thing I had heard.
Why do you think that this was not, the public was not notified about this, or counsel? Aaron Rollins has said he knew nothing about it. Jason Schauber said he didn't know anything about it. Ayers Ratliff said he didn't know anything about it. Why didn't the public know? Why didn't you know?
You know, again, I can speculate, but I can't really pinpoint an answer. I mean, the firehouse is a very touchy subject. And I don't mean that in the sense that it's a bad thing. I don't mean that in the sense that it's, you know, something to shy away from. The city of Marion, the voters, you know, came together and approved that fire levy purely for the sake of helping our firefighters get something that not only is incredibly needed in order for them to perform their duties, but it is incredibly well-deserved. Our firefighters have been working so incredibly hard. They take care of so many different aspects of different things that happen in the community. I mean, they're very involved, and the work that they do is so incredibly important. And I think for them to get a firehouse and for them to pass the levy was such an accomplishment. And the city, the voters, they're very, very proud of the fact that we were able to do that, you know, and that became a very big point of, okay, we've come together, we've approved this. When are we going to see this actually happen? And so for it to be put on hold, in my opinion, again, this is just speculation. You know, you don't want to see something that so many people banded together for suddenly be put on the back burner. And to have to break that news is kind of a big deal. So, again, I can speculate. I can say that it's a thing that you don't want to have to tell people, so you're going to push off telling them as long as possible, but I can't confirm that.
Want to talk about the Treasury Investment Board. That's yourself, the treasurer, the law director, the mayor, the head of the finance committee. Now, it was everybody's understanding that these meetings would now be held on committee night, and it had even happened once in the past. This past Monday, there was a meeting called during the day that nobody was aware of. The public was not aware of it. The media was not aware of it. Aaron Rollins and Ayers Ratliff, the other two members of the Finance Committee, said they were not aware of it. $2 million plus was divested out of the investment funds during that meeting. Why was this meeting not held Monday night? Why was it held Monday morning? And why did nobody say anything about that?
So, I believe I can share a little bit of light on. When it comes to the Treasury Investment Board, majority of the time it's either myself or Tommy Reese calling those meetings. This particular meeting was put together and requested by my office because we were looking at end of year, we were looking at bond payments, we were looking at lots of different expenses coming in through November and December, and we realized, okay, we're going to need a little bit of help. That being said, I did push to have the meeting before Thanksgiving because bond payments are before Thanksgiving. We always try and send them out before the 1st of December. So I did push for an earlier meeting. To be 110% transparent, I had completely forgotten about having meetings during committees. That is 100% on me. I should have remembered that, and I should have mentioned it when the meeting was scheduled. It completely escaped me, and I didn't even remember it until Monday night at committee meetings. I take full responsibility for that one. So that will be put on the forefront of my mind every time I talk about the Treasury Investment Board from here on out. But yeah, so when the meeting was called, it was scheduled by Martin Watts, because he does all the scheduling for the Treasury Investment Board. He puts together the agendas and sends out the notices. So when he scheduled it, he scheduled it for as early as possible, and that was Monday morning at 9 a.m. Again, I completely forgot about the request to have him on committee nights. Otherwise, I would have gently reminded him that we needed to reschedule it for 6:30 that night or later, you know, given the committees that were called for that evening. And so that is something that is going to be corrected moving forward, but that was a mistake on my part. It completely escaped my mind.
Well, and Miranda, that's very big of you to take the blame for this, and I think maybe some of it is deserving, but everybody else on that board was aware of these meetings happening during committee nights. Did anybody say during that meeting, the law director, the mayor, the treasurer, did anybody say, you know, we shouldn't be having this now. We agreed to have these during the committee meetings. And also, that night, there was a question that came up early in the night, and everybody who was in that meeting acted as if they didn't know the answer until it came up that that meeting had happened that morning.
Yes, and you're right. You know, that question was asked, and I don't think anyone did answer that. And I believe, if I recall, that question you're mentioning, it was during budget discussions, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, right.
And you're correct again. Nobody in that meeting did mention anything about having the meeting during committees. So that I can speculate. I would assume that it's another situation where we all forgot, but I'm not going to confirm that because that's speaking for four other people that I can't do that. But it was definitely something that we should have clarified. We should have confirmed it moving forward. And that's definitely, like I said, going to be corrected from here on out.
I want to get to some of the big issues of the day. The people in Marion not getting paid today. What happened? Because I've heard about three different stories from three different people, and that's just so far.
Okay. So let me give you the timeline. Last night at 5:20, at 5:20, our IT specialist, Jacob Bolden, received an email from ADP. It appeared to be an automated email that said something along the lines of the wire request that had been submitted to our bank, FAHI, on behalf of ADP had not been approved, basically just letting us know that, you know, nothing's going to happen until it gets approved. 5:29 p.m., he forwarded the email to me. I unfortunately did not see it until about 7:23. I was at home with my kids. We were in the middle of making dinner. Things were bananas last night. So, things are always bananas with four kids, but that's besides the point. As soon as I saw the email, I did get in touch with Bill Collins, Rob Cowell, and Mike Bodine. I let them know what the situation was. I said I was calling every person at ADP that I could find a phone number for, trying to figure out what we could do in order to make sure the payroll went out. 8:45 last night, I was actually able to get on a phone call with two of our ADP team, and we were all in agreement. I mean, at 8:45, the night before payroll, unfortunately nothing could happen. You know, banks are closed at that time. The Fed is closed at that time. No one's in any office in order to push a button. I mean, there's nothing. There, unfortunately, was nothing we could do last night. I had also spoken with our contact at FAHI. I let him know the situation of what was going on. When I spoke with John at FAHI, he did let me know about a conversation that had happened earlier that day with Martin Watts, my deputy auditor, where he had had a conversation regarding wires because there was a wire coming in and then there was this request for money to go out via wire for payroll. I did not find out about that conversation until about 7:45 when I spoke to John, but apparently that conversation had occurred around 3 o'clock. Martin wasn't in the office yesterday afternoon. He had some things he had to take care of. So I wasn't aware of the conversation. I didn't know what was going on. I honestly didn't even know he'd talked to John at all that day. So that was issue number one. Once we figured out what was going on, I did ask John, I said, is there any way we can get in the office early? You know, how early can we send the wire? He and I coordinated and I went to the bank and signed wire documents this morning around 8:30 so that they could get to ADP. And I believe I got confirmation of them sending it around 9:30 this morning. And then I got confirmation from ADP that payroll had been processed and sent out from their wire team around 10:35 this morning.
You know, Miranda, turning to Martin, there's been a lot of conversation about him recently in regard to this issue, but also monies that he appropriated not too long ago that he apparently should not have appropriated. This is certainly a reflection of your office. He's got a high position in your office as deputy auditor. He works for you. Should this man still be employed by your office? Because a lot of people are questioning that.
You're right, and several people have actually questioned me about that directly today. Here's the thing about Martin. Martin has a wealth of knowledge. He's not only been in the auditor's office since 2020 and seen quite a bit of things go on. He has a ton of experience in accounting from his multiple years of working with the state, of working with the county. I mean, he's worked a little bit of everywhere. So, Martin is not somebody I want to get rid of. I'm just going to state that for the record right now. That being said, Martin and I do have moments where we butt heads. We do have moments where I look at him and I just kind of grumble. For those that don't know, some of the history with Martin and I, he was interim auditor for a short period of time between Robert Landon's resignation and my appointment. When I came into office, Martin was still there, and several people in the weeks leading up to me actually taking office had suggested that the very first thing I do when I go into office was fire him. And at that point, I had never met Martin. I'd never had a conversation with him. I didn't know who he was. So I was taking advice. I was listening to it, but I was under the approach of learn for myself and make a decision based on what I learned. I'll be honest, that very first day, I think I went in at 9 and I had the wrong person in my ear. And Martin didn't make it to lunch. I wrote him a letter. I did not even fire him to his face. I wrote him a letter and had someone escort him from the building. It took me about a week to realize that I'd made a huge mistake because I was coming into an office that was in complete shambles and I had no idea, you know, heads from tails. And then it took me about another week to swallow my pride and call him back. So, Martin and I don't want to say we have a tumultuous history. We started off very rocky. But we do. We work very closely together. You know, he maintains quite a bit of stuff at the office. Quite a bit of stuff. He is the tax commissioner as well, so he does kind of oversee the tax department. In conjunction with our tax administrator who has been there for, oh my gosh, almost 30 years now. So he is a key member of the team. I do get concerned about some of the decisions that he makes. And there are issues as far as communication when it comes to certain things that happen. The wire issue from yesterday being a huge one. And as soon as I found out what was going on, he was the person I consulted. And majority of people know me, like I'm very conscientious of what time I call or text people because I was taught you don't call or text people after 9 o'clock. I blew that rule straight out of the water yesterday. I didn't even think about it. I was texting Martin and I was like, what the heck is going on? So I did bother him extensively. And then I bothered him extensively this morning. And I was like, tell me exactly what happened. So we did have a very long conversation about it. We did clarify a lot of things about what was going on moving forward. So it is something that we've had continual conversations about today. It is something that we will continue to have conversations about today moving forward, and it's definitely something that we're going to have to put at the forefront of our minds, because payroll is not something I take lightly, let alone that I will allow my staff to take lightly.
You know, Miranda, people listening to this are going to say, you're going to take the brunt of this, you're going to take the blame for this, but why would this man at 3 o'clock or 3:30 in the afternoon, whenever it was, when he was aware that there was an issue and had talked to the bank about the wire for people getting paid the very next day, why would he never talk to you about that? Why? What was his reason when you asked him about that? Why didn't he notify you?
So, and again, and you're 100% right, Scott. I think a big thing is I'm going to take the brunt of this, and does that suck? Absolutely. I don't want to be put through the ringer anymore, but c'est la vie. I think the biggest thing is we're all doing the best we can. And I know when Martin was talking to our banker at SAHE, part of the conversation he and I had this morning was that anytime there's fraud, John calls Martin, because he's the first one that needs to be notified if there's fraud on the account. And so yesterday when they were having this conversation, Martin was worried that it was potentially fraud. So he said, no, don't do anything with it. We'll have a conversation tomorrow. We'll figure out what it is. So Martin was doing what he felt was best, and I'm not upset with him for that. You know, if I had randomly heard a $400 or $400,000 figure trying to become, you know, tried to be withdrawn from our account, I probably would have panicked. But I completely agree. I think the communication between Martin and I does need to improve. And I hate to say this was a learning lesson for us, but that's what I have to chalk it up to. I mean, I can't say that there's nothing wrong with my office. Obviously, every office has something wrong with it. And at this point, there was purely a breakdown in communication, and we're going to have to work on that.
But at this point, you will keep him on in your office.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, he plays a key part in everything going on. He's got a knowledge, a lot of knowledge of the system. He's got a lot of knowledge of grants that come in and out and our tax breakdowns and different funds and the activities that go on in each fund. So he does a lot. And I absolutely do not, under any circumstances, want to say that he is a problem, because he's not. I mean, he makes questionable choices sometimes, sure, but we always end up talking about them and trying to figure out a path forward. I think the biggest thing is making sure that we're all on the same page. And that's where the breakdown came in. That's what needs to be corrected.
A couple more things I want to cover here, Miranda. 10% cut in every department in the city. Is that possible without departments making layoffs?
I'm going to be honest right now. I don't know. And the reason I say that is because I want to be able to go through the budget with the biggest magnifying glass I've ever seen in my life. The budget's a huge document. I was going through it with a councilman earlier, and I think we said there was over 3,000 lines in the budget. So, and that's including revenue and expenses. So it's a very big document. There's a lot going on in it. When I do the tax budget every year, which is the document prepared in June, July, when I do the tax budget every year, I go in and I do every single line, revenues and expenses. I take a look at the last 4 or 5 years. I compare actual numbers to budgeted numbers. I look at historical trends. I see how much was actually spent and all that stuff. And it probably takes me a solid 2 weeks to get through it. I genuinely think, and I'm not saying by any means this is going to take me 2 weeks, but I genuinely think that that's what's going to need to happen with the budget now, because there's so many, I mean, $19 million in the general fund is a very big number. there's got to be a way to cut that back. I mean, there's no way that's feasible. And the only way that we're going to be able to get it down is by taking a look at absolutely every single line.
What is the projected revenue for 2026? The mayor said something on Monday. There was something in the email today. Do we know what the projected revenue is for next year?
I believe when Martin took a look at it, the email that the mayor is referring to is the email that Martin looked at. If I recall, and I don't have numbers directly in front of me, so I'm ballparking these. If I recall from that spreadsheet that he sent out to the mayor, I want to say it was $16.8 million for general fund. I can confirm that and get you actual numbers later, but I want to say 16.8. That's not including some grants and things like that. So that is a wiggle number.
One of the questions people have, Miranda, is when Mayor Schertzer left office, you were there, the investment fund had close to $17 million in it. Now,
yes,
it's about $5 million. Where does $12 million go in less than 2 years?
Well, I can tell you that about $5 million of it was taken out roughly this time last year, between bond payments and end-of-year expenses. I think it totaled to around $5 million, if I'm not mistaken. Part of that was there were several projects that were carried over. So a lot of our big projects, you know, street projects and things like that, a lot of our big projects are rolled over from year to year. Like they'll start in 1 year and carry over into the next year because it's not finished. Things like that. And there were several projects that rolled from 23 to 24, and they were big projects. So those need to be paid out. And then there were additional projects that were lined up for 24 that rolled into 25. So that was another big chunk. As far as the full $12 million, again, I'd have to sit down and I'd have to actually go through line by line and figure out exactly where all of it went, because I don't have those numbers directly in front of me right now. But I can get those numbers for you.
Well, I think the question is, people are wondering why under Mayor Schertzer was there not this issue? Why is there this issue now?
There could be lots of different answers. A lot of different things, especially in the last several years, when it came to different debts and things like that, debts can be rolled into bonds. So I believe the bonds that were taken out in 2020 were kind of a renewal of old bonds to save some interest, which was fantastic. I think there were either a couple fire trucks that were rolled into that as well. So debt can be rolled into debt. You know, it's like taking a bunch of credit cards and rolling them into a personal loan type of thing, right? So you can take a bunch of debt and kind of ballpark it into one payment. So, you know, a lot of stuff was borrowed for and paid off that way. We also have to account for ARPA funds and COVID. COVID brought in $2 million-ish, I think. That all came in and went out in the course of 2.5 years. So that's another big chunk of money that literally just comes right back, you know, comes in, gets accounted for, and goes right back out. So that's a big chunk. And then we also have to think about contracts, salary increases, things like that. Those are all things that needed to be accounted for. I'm not saying that this is something that they saw and didn't care about. I am not saying that at all. But I think a big part of it comes down to, you know, when you're in a line of work for so long, you kind of stop seeing the trees, right? You look at the forest, big picture, and the details kind of start to escape you. I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm saying it's a possibility, because especially when it comes to finances and things, and they had an auditor that was in there for an extended period of time. They had somebody that was, you know, taking care of absolutely everything, and then to have that removed and have someone brand new come in and try and do all of it, it kind of throws everything off. So I can only speculate as to what was going on with the prior administration, but I know that now with everything going on with Bill and trying to make sure that things are headed back on the right track, I think we're headed in the right direction on getting things resolved.
Well, that's good for the people to hear in town, but I guess the final question I have is there a good grasp of the budget with this administration? Because the question is that we look at everything that has gone on in the last 2 years. We've seen a budget director hired. We've seen a grant writer hired. We have seen the $10,000 of finances allocated for the party in the park. We've seen the money go out for signs and go out for paperwork and things of that nature, letterheads. We've seen the transit service expanded. I mean, was this too much financially for the city to hold?
And honestly, that's the big question. And that's part of what I'm hoping that we'll be able to resolve. That's part of what I'm hoping we'll be able to really nail down and figure out, because a lot of these things, you know, they may seem small. Like, and I don't mean small in dollar figure, I mean small in concept. You know, nobody's going to look twice at letterhead. Nobody's going to think twice about a new sign or anything like that, but it all does add up, and I think that's the big thing. You know, again, to kind of use an analogy of going to the gas station, right? You make a habit of going to the gas station for a cup of coffee every single day, and you don't think about it because it's, you know, a buck, 2 bucks every day. By the end of the year, that's, if it's 2 bucks a day, you're talking over $700 gone out of your pocket that you don't have, that could have been saved or spent to pay down debt or blown on a vacation, you know, something like that. It's the same concept on a significantly bigger scale. No one's going to look at letterhead and think $500 for letterhead is a big deal. Nobody's going to look at a sign and think $10,000 for a sign is a big deal. But that's a bad number, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You add up all these smaller transactions, and eventually you're going to look at it going, oh my goodness, how did we get to this point? We got to this point because we added up tiny transactions over 2 years.
And my, I guess as we wrap this up, transit has always been a big conversation. Now you pay the bills for transit. Transit has not been a money maker, is my understanding. Is transit at a big deficit at this point?
So transit is a department that is supported by the general fund. And basically what that means is while transit does generate revenues, there is still going to be a shortfall, and so the general fund makes up the difference. Now, there are several things that come into transit. I mean, there's the revenues from the fares. I know that during night moves, there was revenues from, like, renting space for advertisements. There was revenues from rentals for private parties on certain nights and things like that. So there are multiple revenue streams. There's also grants that come in and those kinds of things for transit. But there's still going to be a shortfall. Again, I do not have that exact number in front of me. You caught me at a very bad time. I'm not going to have numbers in front of me at 9:30 at night, Scott. I apologize. I should have been more prepared.
No. I appreciate you speaking with us. And I just, you know, I wonder where this all goes, because there's been a lot of questions this week about the things that have happened. And you know, I guess, how do you think Monday night's meeting is going to go?
Monday night's meeting is going to be interesting. I mean, the good thing is Monday night's meeting is it's a full council meeting. And I don't think the budget's, I know the budget's not going to be on there because it didn't get passed out of committee, but I don't believe that the agenda is going to be too heavy. I think also the Monday before Thanksgiving, most of the council members are going to think, okay, hurry up, let's get us out of here, it's a holiday. So hopefully it won't be too long, but we'll have to wait and see. I mean, I don't doubt for a second that someone won't bring the budget up under matters not on the agenda. I'm sure it's still going to be a hot topic. I'm sure people are going to have questions. I'm sure that's going to be a conversation that's going to be had. I think we just have to wait and see what it looks like.
We'll see what happens on Monday. Miranda, thanks for coming on Friday night. I certainly appreciate it, and I'll see you Monday.
Sounds good, Scott. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye. Marion City Auditor Miranda McGinnis. Well, Matt, what do you think? Phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. We got a few minutes left here.
Well, it would seem to me that there's a lack of communication within the auditor's office itself, not just among the, you know, separate departments in the auditor's office.
Well, she was honest.
She was honest. Oh, I'll give her that. She was honest.
You know, and I think that's refreshing.
Oh, yeah, honesty is always good.
You know, you want
to... Honesty tends to be the best policy, as they say.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see how that all goes. It's hard to take responsibility for something like we've seen in the last week. And, anything.
Just like the finances?
Yeah, anything to do with the finances.
Well, I think there's a lot. I mean, it goes around. There's a lot of blame to go around there with the finances.
It would seem. And again, if anybody has a comment, please feel free to weigh in. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. 55 minutes past the hour. A few minutes left in the broadcast tonight. You know, yeah, what a week it's been.
I think it's been interesting.
You just wonder sometimes, don't you?
Oh, I think you got to think. It's good to think.
Well, you know, I'm still really not sure what the budget director does.
Yeah, I don't think she answered the question.
Well, I'm not sure she knows. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of communication between her and the budget director.
Well, I mean, I was going to ask you, I guess, but you didn't. I mean, you're the one who asked the question. I mean, you know, the question has been asked multiple times now, and we still don't know exactly what the budget director does.
No, we don't.
Looks and lays out the budget, I guess.
Yeah, but, you know, darned if I can figure out any of this.
I don't know. I mean...
You know, usually you can trace some of this back somehow. To somebody, to somewhere. I don't know. You know, I'm lost.
Well, I mean, I don't know when the city started having money problems, really.
I don't know.
But... I mean, I think the fact that our books haven't been reconciled is not helpful.
Oh, that? The reconciling of the books? That was around 2020.
Well, yeah, but were the city, was the city in rough financial straits before 2020?
I don't remember hearing about it if we were.
Well, so, yeah, I'm going to assume the fact that the books got all kinds of messed up at some point had something to do with the fact that the finances are in a rough spot.
Yeah, somehow.
But I don't know that I would have continued to just spend money.
I think that's ultimately the problem. I think that's what you can chalk a lot of this up to.
Just continual spending of money?
Well, you just, yeah, you
books?
Can't spend money when you don't know you have. I mean, I don't know. I would think that would be the term you would use, would be reckless.
Reckless is a rough word, yeah.
Yeah, well, what other word do you got?
I don't know. Reckless, I don't know. I don't know if... I don't know. I was going to say irresponsible, but I don't know if that's any better a word.
I mean, is there a Harry Truman moment here? Is there a buck stops here? I mean, we're going to see 10% cut out of departments. Now, again, I don't know what a department is. Is the administration a department? Is the senior center a department? Is the rec center a department? I don't know.
I don't know how. I don't know. I mean, are they taking like 10% from every line item?
I don't know.
Other than like obviously, I guess salaries. I guess you can't take 10% from salaries.
I just find it very hard to believe that nobody had a clue. You've got all these people dealing in the finances of the city, and nobody had a clue what was coming down the path. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, Scott, I started looking through that proposed budget. It's attached to the agenda. Now I know it's going to change. But yes, the senior center is a department. And Mr. Bodine got a raise from 2024 to 2025, and he's scheduled to get a raise in 2026 also. And I posted that, and Jason Schauber, I know you're getting ready to go off the air, Jason Schauber posted the ordinance from 2007 when that job was originally created, and it was never supposed to pay more than $62,000, and there hasn't been an update to the ordinance. So it seems like Bodine is getting paid about $20,000 more than what that ordinance authorized.
For his entire run?
For his position, yes. That job is supposed to be like 62 max.
So there's been a misappropriation of 20,000.
I'm not going to call it a misappropriation because that's a felony, and I'm not going to start accusing people of felonies. Well, I have in the past, but this one isn't 100% clear to me. But I see I have another letter to write to the state auditor.
But who decided that pay?
City council. Back then, when he decided, because the service director job was created in 2007. I have the ordinance. It was created in 2007, and it was up to $62,000 back then. Well, it was never amended to pay up to whatever it is that he makes. But when they proposed it in the budget and agreed to it, you know, they agreed to reenact or whatever, resume the position. I mean, the position existed, they just never filled it, you know what I mean?
When they agreed to
refill this position, they never upped the pay to what he's making.
So council didn't up the pay?
No, they never updated the report, I guess.
Who voted for this pay update?
I guess that's for Auditor of State Keith Faber, whatever, to figure out, isn't it?
Well, I guess I'm just confused. He was hired for the position, right?
Yeah, well, he was appointed, yes.
Appointed, hired, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so he got put in the position. So who said pay him this?
I don't remember, and we can't go back and listen. I would probably have to go back and read through the notes or the minutes, because Trina Rose was still the clerk and she took good minutes, so I'm sure it's probably in there. But the budget, I mean, I'm going through the budget, and yes, the senior center is a its own department.
Is the administration part of it? Is downtown Marion part of it?
It says administration, and no, downtown Marion isn't considered a department. And I'll tell you what, if downtown Marion funding, Thursday nights we provide police, we provide city and streets, we provide everything else to block off the streets and all this other stuff, and the city absorbs the cost, and we can't do that anymore, and we also cannot fund them.
Well,
because
I guess
when the Popcorn Festival happens, the Popcorn Festival pays for their police service. Third Thursdays do not. City eats that on top of the $50,000 we give them.
Well, I guess what I don't understand is okay, why? It's all kinds of screwed up, and I
just listened to Schauber's interview before I tuned into you. I hadn't listened to you today. And Matthew, I apologize for calling you foolish, but I just wanted to say, do you think the produce department manager doesn't tell the store manager what's going on?
Oh well, I mean, I don't think. I mean, not really. No, I'll be 100 with you. Nobody knows what's happening.
What?
Well, that's
enough. So
don't open that can of worms, for God's sake. Don't open that can of worms.
Typically, wouldn't you think the produce manager would...
You would think they would communicate, yes. You think there'd be a phone call.
Typically, that's the way things work. So we'll move on.
Listen, I talk to the store manager quite frequently. That's what I'm going to tell you. I talk to almost every break I have a conversation with the store manager. So the point is though, what I don't understand is, okay, the senior center is going to have to cut something out of its budget. Transit's going to have to cut something out of its budget. The sanitation department, the police department.
And when you look at some of these budgets, they are very, very large. And you were talking about very, very large cuts. Like, how does the police department cut hundreds of thousands of dollars without cutting salaries?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Unless they're hitting overtime or something, you know? Like, eliminate all overtime.
Well, here's the thing. I guess the bottom line on tonight's program is, how do you not... And there will not be an economic development position. We learned that today because the mayor's taking that off the table.
There should not be.
So how can you not...
Not right now.
Right. But how can you not be spending a penny on economic development, but spending what is it, 50,000 on downtown Marion?
Well, right. But they've also convinced us in city council how many times have they said, oh, we're not completely without economic development. Mr. Bodine and I have been talking to people, and Lingeza.
You got it.
Okay, I got it this time without trying. Maybe I shouldn't try. But, you know, we've been talking about all these deals and Evelyn, so we're not just completely giving up on economic development. So let them keep doing that. If they're doing, you know, we've got this Dollar General that still hasn't moved in down here and it's been promised for over a year. So just let them keep doing what they're doing.
Well, I think
so we can afford something different.
Well, I mean, I think that's what's been done. I mean, the mayor did take it off the table in his email, but I don't.
Can we really say that people are going to be like, ooh, Marion, Ohio, let's move there. I heard they're in fiscal distress.
Well, I just don't understand how 10% is going to come out of some of these budgets. You know, my understanding of the senior center was they were in bad shape to begin with. And I certainly don't understand how you pull, I mean, what would it be, $800,000 out of the police budget? I don't understand that.
I hadn't made it all the way to the police budget, but if Schauber said it's $8 million, I'm going to take his word for that. But let's even just say a half million. How you cut a half million dollars out of
more than a half million.
Without, and if they have a half million, I'm just...
Right, I know what you're saying, but I mean, the fire budget...
If they have $500,000 that they can cut without affecting people, then they got a hell of a lot of waste, wouldn't you say?
Well, is that what this is going to prove to find, I guess? Because if there are no layoffs, and God, let's hope that's what happens, but doesn't
then that
prove these...
we had $2 million worth of waste?
I guess. So, I mean, I don't know how anybody wins with this, because if they cut 10% out of every department in the city and not one person gets laid off, then they were spending a lot of money that they did not need to spend. And if they aren't spending money where they need to spend it, or not spending a lot of extra money, then people are going to get laid off. I don't think this is good either way.
No. We're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't.
Right, so, you know, but I'll give Mayor Collins credit. At least he's doing something. You know, you got to take the helm here at
you
some point.
You know what? Didn't Schauber say or tell you that there's going to be possibly a letter from the state regarding our financial situation on Monday?
Well, I think the mayor, it's in the mayor's email, I think.
Okay, I thought I had read that on your page. Like I said, I hadn't really tuned in until later this evening, and that's how I need to listen to the Schauber interview. So your internet presence has reached. But so we might have a letter as soon as Monday. We were all expecting that to take 30 days. This is taking, 2 weeks? I'm telling you, they told us, you send us that letter or we're stepping in. And it's been predetermined what they're going to put us in. They're just processing the paperwork. And I'm sure we're at least going to go into fiscal watch.
Interesting times ahead. Hey, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, Matt, what's coming up next on your show?
Well, we're going to, you know, keep talking about this, and there were a couple of football things to talk about, but, you know, only a couple, so
all right.
Out of the way pretty quick.
Well, Matt's up next, and that's it for me. Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Week donation / pledge will support and sponsor a Voice of a People.
Voice of a People with Linda Sims can be heard every Wednesday and Thursday morning from 10:10 a.m.